All right, welcome to the Health Ranger Report. I'm Mike Adams, a little bit of a hoarse voice today, which I'll explain later. I've been doing a little too much screaming, it turns out. But I've got a great interview for you today with Doc Pete Chambers, and he's just an extraordinary American, a Green Beret, you know, a surgeon, battlefield surgeon, a wonderful individual. He's helping to organize neighborhood watch programs and things like that. He's got some informed consent work. He's working on some legislation for health freedom for active duty soldiers and also veterans. And so he joins me to talk about all those issues and so much more. And we cover the economic collapse scenarios and what happens in certain cities across America, how we can be better prepared locally to be able to handle what comes our way. So stay with me here on Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams. We'll be right back with this interview with Dr. Pete Chambers. Stay with us. All right, welcome. This is Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com. Excuse my raspy voice today. I'll explain that later. But I've got a great guest joining me today, someone who I first met in studio at the Alex Jones Studios in Austin. It's a U.S. Army surgeon and Green Beret, Doc Pete Chambers, as he goes by, an extraordinary individual that's in this battle for health freedom and really helping to get a lot of things changed for veterans and active duty members of the military and also civilians as well. Dr. Pete Chambers, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you on, sir.
It's great to hear you, and it was great meeting you the first time. Yes, sir.
Well, you are an extraordinary individual. You've been through a lot yourself. Can you give our viewers, since this is the first time that we've been able to interview you here, mm-hmm. Can you give our viewers a quick background of what led you to where you are right now?
Sure. I was a 18-year-old kid looking for a job, joined the Army in 1983 under Ronald Reagan, served 39 years between active guard and reserves, did my last stint with Texas National Guard on the border, and the invasion that I call it on our southern border, finished that in May, and retired. And along the way, I was an infantryman, a paratrooper, a Green Beret, and a flight surgeon. So I guess you call it a Swiss Army knife.
Wow, I guess so. So did you serve as a surgeon, as you know, on staff?
I never really worked in a hospital. Yeah. You know, when you're a Green Beret doc, they expect you to do the same stuff. So you're jumping out of planes, you're on the X, so to speak, or we call it, you know, being close to the battle. I tended to get a little closer than the commanders liked. However, I always explained that's where the casualties are, sir. And you know, there's a lot of because I did carry a rifle before and before that job. So they felt comfortable with me being out there, and it's where I needed to be.
And well, brought that guys makes, home. Makes good sense. I want to give out your website too. It's drpetechambers.com. So drpetechambers.com. And you've got all your links there where people can find you on Telegram and other places as well. Mm-hmm. And when your most recent deployment was, as you said, with the Texas National Guard, correct, on the border?
Yes, sir.
And that deployment just ended recently, did it not?
For me, it ended probably at the end of the year, you know, December. But I had to continue on to get my retirement. 30th of May is when I officially retired.
Oh, okay.
Out, but yeah, that was quite an event down there.
Yeah, and it's nowhere near over either,
as
you well know. And it's a problem that's being widely ignored. But we're not even going to focus on that problem tonight. Let's talk about vaccines. And I know that you publicly said that you know you were vaccine injured, and mm-hmm. you're fighting for vaccine choice in the military. Can you give us a quick briefing of your experience in that area?
Sure, absolutely. That's great. Then we could segue into the fight. When the shots first came out for the military, and then I was put on that mission to Operation Lone Star to be the surgeon, like every other soldier standing in line. This was before VAERS data, before the defense medical epidemiology data that I was a whistleblower on, before all of that. Hey, here's your next shot. You're taking this. And I had just come from Africa, so I was not in the know as far as what was going on worldwide with this thing. We don't get a lot of news in the Sahara. So I show up to Texas and you know, take the shot. You're going to be the task force surgeon. I go down there. And within a few weeks, I started getting some brain fog and the typical things you hear people, vertigo, tinnitus, you know, ringing in the ears. And then somewhere about 2-3 weeks later, Some of the soldiers that opted to take it on their own, they didn't have to at the time, had my first case of a soldier that was 27-year-olds with myocarditis. Now, didn't really put it together at that time. It's, you know, hindsight's 20/20 now. But as we started getting more cases and more things like that in this younger population, and I really followed this soldier carefully, we had to pull him out of the military. His heart, you know, became like an 80-year-old with congestive heart failure.
Wow.
So that was concerning. Mandates come along in August, the Department of Defense mandates where we had to take them. At this point, I've been doing informed consents, following people like Dr. Tenpenny and Dr. Malone and Dr. McCullough. I was listening to them, but they didn't really have an informed consent for us to give out. They just said, okay, well, just tell them to take it. And I'll tell you an interesting story here in a second, but I'm doing informed consents and nobody's taking it because essentially I'm at this point, I'm going, no, we're not doing this because I've already started to have this problem where, you know, I got vertigo. I can't drive. My job, I went from McAllen, Texas to Presidio, Texas and back and forth. So that's a long ways, right? That's nearly half the border of 1,249 miles. So driving was a problem for me. But the other problem was me putting people in the hospital. And when I called and spoke with Dr. Teresa Long, the flight surgeon out of Fort Rucker, active duty flight surgeon, she had done an affidavit that was eloquent and explained her point of view of what she was seeing with aviators. And so we got together. And then we presented to Senator Johnson in the Senate side, Wisconsin Senator, the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database, which showed the skyrocketing, you know, for example, neurologic disorders, 11x rise, you know, 1100%. Okay, so we presented that. And when we did, the DOD shut the system down. And yes, that's when I knew we had a nefarious actor in our midst, either that or a bunch of idiots running the system.
So now, since then, of course, Attorney Thomas Renz has worked with DOD whistleblowers, you know, other than yourself as well. And a lot of has come out. And yet the Pentagon has not changed its stance. It's, I mean, to my understanding, it's still you have to take the shots, you know, shutting down all critical questioning, shutting down any surgeons or doctors. You know, I've interviewed Dr. Sam Sigaloff as well on this issue. Why, in your estimation, has the Pentagon not been willing to listen to the data on this?
Okay, so yeah, this is Sam Sigaloff is a hero in my book, and you know, so is Lieutenant Bashaw and Therese Long, obviously the Joan of Arc of this thing. She kicked it off. Why are they tripling down now? It's either pride or it is there are some backside financial reward for people up at the top. And I could not say that when I was in uniform, but the more and more that I see it and more that I understand how this system works, despite the fact that we found out, and look, I testified, Teresa Long testified in Tampa, SEALs versus Lloyd Austin, and we got it admitted into evidence. They were not safe. They are not effective. And how did you, Dr. Chambers, on the border, keep your guys on the border before they were mandated at a very low vax rate, healthy? By lesser intrusive means. This is how simple it is. Betadine mixed with saline. Do a nasal swab after you see 17,000 people this week on the border. Okay, yeah. Doc. And that's what we did, and nobody was sick. Once the mandates came, 77% double vaxxed, the ones that were sick.
So, well, let me ask you this, and you know, you're, of course, never... I'm not trying to push you in any direction on answering this. You're free to disagree, obviously. But I have said, based on interviewing other guests, that it looks to me like there are traitors at the top of the Pentagon that are trying to weaken the U.S. military to make our country vulnerable to invasion or war. Now, I realize that that's pretty far down the spectrum of possibilities. It's pretty damn evil if true. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to someone like me saying something like that?
I have no problem with that because that's definitely in the quiver of, you know, when you look at when I consider what an enemy is going to do to me, I look at the most likely course of action and the most dangerous, and that's on the most dangerous side. And I have some assurance that is partially true with some of the actors at the top. Yes, that wow. there is sabotage going on of our military. There is a culling of the force of people like me, critical thinkers that say, hey, no. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to interpose. I told his two-star general, no, sir, that's an unlawful order, when he told me not to do informed consents. You got to stand up and do that. And when you do that, it's dangerous for you. Despite whistleblower act and all these things, it's not worth the paper it's written on. But there are people like those whistleblowers that are out there doing it every day. We got 9 more that just came out with something great and wrote it up and sent it out to every single legislator on the Hill. What is that going to do? It's been served, you know, you've been served kind of thing. But yeah, there are nefarious actors that are within our ranks. I believe that.
Well, that's no surprise to our listeners, because, well, there's been a lot of infiltration of many institutions. But let me bring in this other element here.
Mm-hmm.
In news recently, and this is in the context of escalation into global war,
mm-hmm,
and the readiness of the United States, or I should say the lack of readiness. So recently it was reported that the United States funded the purchase of 100,000 rounds of artillery from South Korea to be shipped to Ukraine. And I think those are rounds for the M777s, or not the HIMARS rounds, but these, it dawned upon people in reporting that news and reading it that the United States has apparently run out of excess munitions, or is perhaps keeping some amount in reserve, but cannot let go of any more, and is having to reach internationally for munitions to supply Ukraine, which, when that is combined with what we just talked about, the potentially, you know, deliberate weakening of U.S. troops, and then the lack of munitions remaining because so much has been sent to Ukraine, doesn't this raise a lot of red flags about the vulnerability of domestic defense in the U.S.?
Correct. Yeah. At the strategic level, we cannot handle a war on two fronts anymore. And you know, my job as a lieutenant colonel was to marry up the tactical situation on the ground with strategic level planning. And so, you know, those things would come down to me. I know for a fact, and this is me, firsthand information, state of Texas, that our munitions have been depleted, period. Now, I can give you that firsthand. I've heard from other people that, yes, that's happened branch-wide, as far as the HIMARS, the Carl Gustavs, which are anti-tank round, been around for a long time. There are newer versions out that are pretty accurate. The 155 rounds, which are howitzer rounds that are, you know, indirect fire weapons. So those have been depleted to the point where, yes, when you're having to shift from other allies or buy, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, I would say. And then you add on top of that the industrial capacity needed to manufacture those weapons, and the requirement of resources of things like copper, metal alloys, you know, aluminum, and also energy and transportation and all these things, plus a lot of issues we have with the domestic labor supply, where a lot of people aren't interested in working, frankly. The question becomes, how do we replace those munitions? And if we escalate into a global theater of war, do we even have the capacity to sustain the soldiers in the field, right? That's a legitimate question, is it not?
It's absolutely. Yeah. Logistics, you know, there was once said that an army, you know, marches on its belly. Logistics, to be able to bring things to the fight, is paramount. You can do small, sustained, limited warfare operations where you jump some guys in behind enemy lines, but eventually they're going to need a resupply.
Right.
And when you can't provide that resupply, this is a, you know, a guy like me, a paratrooper's nightmare.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is like a bridge too far right here. You get dropped in and then you're like, well, good luck, you know?
Good luck, right.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you run out of ammo, especially if you're a paratrooper.
Right, so this is the perfect storm for a setup for us. You know, we had 5 million some odd people come across that border. While I was down there, we had 2 million come across in that short period of time that I was down. 22% that my troops that we evaluated, 22% of those people that came across were fighting age males that were not here with family units. Where are they? That's my concern. Where are they?
Yeah, so this almost brings up a bigger question. I mean, it's like they're putting boots on the ground, mm-hmm, occupying the United States with people who could be later activated.
One answer for that, 10th Amendment. Why are we not declaring invasions on the border and in limited, you know, because states have the right to do that in our Constitution. But I feel like every time that we allow our government to declare some sort of emergency, that suspends portions of our Constitution, if not the whole thing. This is a concern. This is why I'm on the legislative, you know, fight now, because I'm speaking directly to these people that are up on the Hill, but also state legislators, to get them to say, hey, this is an invasion on your border. Let's start going after them.
Let's connect the dots then on what we've discussed so far. So on one hand, domestically, we have a Pentagon that is maiming or injuring or killing U.S. Active duty members with vaccines. And to some extent, the civilian population is also being injured or killed by vaccines. Mm-hmm. And then we have these replacement masses by the millions coming across the border with, frankly, unknown vaccination status. So it's not, my understanding is not being mandated on those coming in. So they will maintain fertility. They will be able to reproduce. But the American people are being killed or made infertile or having spontaneous abortions. I mean, this seems like a straight up genocide operation to me.
This is what, you know, a good friend of mine that you've talked to, Michael Yon, he'll be coming back here soon. Michael has termed the phrase human osmotic pressure. And It is a technique that is used by, you know, Stalin used it into Ukraine way back when, and when they had the famines before there. And that's another story. And when you see that, when you transfer migration, you change the populace, you change the attitudes, you change the national pride, if you will, in some nations. So there is no loyalty to that nation. And that changes so quick. You know, this is a quick flip-flop of ideology, if you will, and that is a Marxist agenda.
And this agenda is also being run against Europe, of course, because we've seen the overrunning of France and Germany and to some extent the UK and other countries there with, I guess you could call them migrants in a polite way, who are coming in and like literally raping the French people. And, you know, it's happening to Western nations. That's the point.
Yes. You know, here's an interesting, to put it in perspective, I was standing on the border one night. We had about 900 people coming across one night in Roma, Texas. And I was standing next to an E7, a sergeant first class. And he looked at me and said, Doc, you know, when I was 3 years old, I came across that border. And I had been talking to this guy for a while. He's been in two combat deployments, has a Silver Star, a Bronze Star, and a Purple Heart. All right. Kid came across the border illegally, but became a productive member of society during the typical, and that was 20 years ago or so, probably about 30 years ago when he came across and became, you know, a war hero in my book. And now he's telling me that this is unsustainable. Yeah, I feel for these people too. You see the little kids coming across. I saw many. I mean, I've coded some that died of heat, you know, injuries. Sure. But, you know, we love humanity and we love people. But when you can't sustain it in a hospital, we call that a mass cal. You know, when it overwhelms your system, and you have to go to triage and working out of bags, it overwhelms your system. You just can't. You got to. If we're going to do this, let's do it right. Let's do it legally. But if they do come across like that, we can handle it. We could have handled it back in the day. But right now it's overwhelming. There was a 24-hour period. We had 17,000 Haitians show up in Del Rio. What do you do with that when you got 50 National Guard guys?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the other thing is somebody is encouraging all these people to come across and to bring their children for the pity factor. So it's not like these people are spontaneously just coming up with their own idea. Hey, let's go to America. No. You know, someone is marketing this idea to them and even transporting them in many cases to bring them to this point. So they are being exploited by those globalist forces.
That is the human osmotic pressure thing. I mean, that they are pawns in this. And like I said, you know, I feel bad for them. I was used as a pawn. We were all used as pawns in certain portions of this Afghanistan debacle, which is a whole nother story.
Right.
But, you know, I feel for those people. I feel for the guys that I lost and their families. Yeah. It's discouraging.
Well, yeah, I feel for them too. And I always believe that the best way to have compassion for humanity is to spread freedom, right? I mean, That's how you end human suffering, is allow people to achieve freedom everywhere around the world. And then they don't have, they don't feel like they have to flee if they feel free and abundant at home, wherever they are. So let's shift gears though to Ukraine. There seems to be kind of a pause in the situation there. There's been apparently a retreat by Russia from Kherson, and the weather's getting colder. The ground's not yet fully frozen, but that day is coming. We all know the implications of that from studying World War II and, you know, Soviet movements and so on. Where do you think things stand there right now?
I think we're probably gonna see a some sort of a negotiation take place. Now, you know, some of this, if we see, should we just stand back and we just think about this in the form of a chess player, if you will, and there are people that are, and I'm going to use the globalist elites who are playing chess with different world governments and different different black and white checkers on the board. This has been orchestrated for this time in history to happen, just like many other of these things. You know, the Arab Spring, et cetera. These all take place on a global scale, and somebody has to have some sort of a playbook going out there. But in this case, you know, and I came in under Ronald Reagan. We were practicing with our bayonets and Russian dummies, right? I mean, that, you know, the targets. Right. And so we were trained that the Soviet Union is, you know, the demise of the future of the West. But now, you know, you kind of look back and you think, well, if somebody planted a bunch of bioweapons labs on our border at Mexico, wouldn't that concern you? Wouldn't it concern Putin and the Russians and anybody to the north there? It would concern them. And so the enemy of my enemy is my friend in certain times. I've had to you know, partner up with Taliban forces in the past that were not as extreme, because they were getting, you know, plowed by the extremists. And so, you know, sometimes you have to make a loose affiliation with these. But right now, our populace is so sold on, you know, oh, poor Ukraine. And I got it. Anybody in the field that's a civilian that's innocent, I feel bad for them.
Sure.
But these Azov battalion rascals, these dudes come straight in the lineage of the Nazis. All right. That's just a cold, hard fact. You got to study history to know these things. And the Azov battalion has done their share of atrocities as well to false flag, if you will, some of the events that have taken place there. And I'm sure the Russians are no prima donnas here. I mean, they probably have done their share too, but I think they got what they wanted, which was the Donbass region and Lugan. I believe that they're going to hang on to that. I think, you know, they will do a withdrawal. And they'll come to a stalemate, and then I pray that there's some sort of a ceasefire and an agreement.
So I just want to say thank you, and just want to invite the audience to visit your website, drpetechambers.com. That's drpetechambers.com. And Doc, it's an honor to know you, an honor to be able to visit with you here, and I hope that we get a chance to do this again soon.
I'm sure we will.
All right. Well, thank you so much. God bless you.
Take care, sir.
You too. Now, just stand by for a minute. For those listening, just want to say thank you, and feel free to repost this interview as usual on your own channels or other platforms. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the platform I built so that we can have interviews just like this. So thank you for listening. God bless you all. Take care.